Welcome back. This is Ladies of Gumption episode 169 called Reshuffling the Deck. My name is Jessica and I'm here with
May
and Tatiana.
Tatiana. I was trying to click the mute button.
We are the Ladies of Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. You can contact us if you want to interact by going to our Twitter at DCTVGumption. Follow along with our live tweets. You can send us your feedback for the episodes, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or you can send us on ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Thank you for listening to our podcast. You're probably listening on a variety of different ways. I hope Spotify fixes their shit because I don't know.
I don't know if it fixed it, but the last episode we published was there in full, but okay. The previous one was still there at an hour 25. So I apologize. I don't know what to do with them, to be honest, but hopefully they will fix it soon.
And I don't know if like maybe if it helps if you guys send in from the user side, like fix this shit, because we've also sent it in. So hopefully it's working.
Right, because like everybody's paying for it. So you should have the full episodes.
Exactly.
So
You can also, you know, if you just want to say bump Spotify, I'm going to listen to you on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, other places, or you can pay us $10 and become a Patreon, where you not only get our episodes 24 hours in advance, but you also get extras such as we do a lot of the HBO premium stuff we do on Patreon. We do a lot of the MCU stuff on Patreon as well. Doom Patrol Part 1 we did the week before last, and we're doing Doom Patrol Part 2 this week. So and we got, I have to remember, remind me that we got feedback from Swara on Doom Patrol. So we'll cover feedback. That this week as well. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Like it runs the gamut of, you know, pop culture and entertainment and whatever you guys are watching and we're watching too. So you can find us at www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption if you would like to participate and open up that library of shows. News. There's not really, I feel like either I'm just not remembering news or there's just not a lot of news. We did get a first look, the biggest thing, because it happened like today, we got a first look at Mary Hamilton as Poison Ivy, and she looks fantastic.
Good. She looks good.
She looks so good. I love the red hair.
Her I'm almost outfit. Sad that we have an actual Poison Ivy. Like, after
yeah.
Like, what's the
Because I'm just, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, what's going on with Bridget? Like, she said that she was being treated fairly, but hello. You're not even on here.
He's like, you're not even being treated.
She was like, I was there for 5 minutes, and I was treated like a queen.
But Mary looks fantastic. I'm kind of wondering now if, I guess we'll talk about it when we get to the episode, but if she'll stay Poison Ivy or if, you know, we'll get Bridget's Poison Ivy in flashbacks in the present. How's that going to happen?
I feel like
we do know that we won't see her until
theorizing here, because I feel like Mary's gonna, by the time the mid-season finale comes up, she will, which is next week.
Next week,
she will no longer be Poison Ivy, and then Bridget will like show up.
That's what I expect too. You,
oh yeah, because they have to like scare her.
And this season's shorter, right? It's only 13 episodes, so you know.
But it is confirmed that she'll show up in next year in 2022. So whatever happens in mid-season, and maybe it's, you know, if Mary and Alice figure out where she's buried, and they're like, let's get her up, and then, you know, then that's how she comes to be. I wonder if she comes back. Does that mean like, does she just take her gift back from Mary, or? You know, it's either she's cured by Ryan and her Jada Jet connections, or maybe Pam just like takes back the vine, like, thank you. Give it back, please.
Thank
I don't
you
know.
For keeping the vines warm for me. I'm
exactly.
back.
Who knows? But I am digging the villain, her villain era right now. Also in the news, we have the Flash Armageddon episode 4 synopsis. And this is where we get Eobard Thawne coming into play. It says Barry faces off with Eobard Thawne. He's shocked when Eobard returns in the most unexpected way and with a tie to a loved one.
Stealing Barry's face.
Probably.
Continue.
Oh, you know what? that would make a whole lot of sense for why Barry's suddenly destroying the world.
That was my prediction for the future, but now you get it in the present. Okay.
The Damien Dark is there to offer advice to Barry, but there's a catch, of course. And epic battle, blah, blah, blah. So we have that to look forward to. And that's all that I really got. Did anyone else remember anything?
I don't think there was anything else. It's been a slow few weeks.
So that means...
Camrys's animated film.
It won an award.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Won an award. Yeah. Hmm. So nice for him. We love that.
Okay. So now we can move on to the body of our episode where we will discuss. We will discuss The Flash, Legends, and Batwoman. Give our joys, what did not spark joy, feedback, and crown Lady with Gumption of the Week. Tati is our guide. She's going to take us through this. And we're starting with side A called Level Up, because that is the only thing
that they said in the whole episode.
They want you to know that they are better than what they were before.
Like, this is the theme. It's like, you know, last season with the whole parent thing. It's like, this is what we're doing. I was like, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was quite funny. I definitely forgot to copy the recap. So I'll just like say my own recap. And I guess that's okay. So basically, the episode starts off with everyone leveled up. Barry and Iris ready to make some babies. But not tonight. Because tonight, Ray Palmer is in the house. Because he can't afford a hotel, apparently. I don't know what's going on. But he's here for a tech con. Like, the first time that they have gone to any kind of convention.
Which, by the way, if he's a guest, like, why wouldn't the con just, like, give him a room?
More reason to have
Well, he said they overbooked or something.
Yeah, the one hotel in all of Central City was
But he's, like, the legacy guest. If you're bumping anybody, don't bump the legacy.
Exactly. But anyway, much to Iris's chagrin, she must forego speed sex and just allow Barry and Chester to entertain Ray. Chester is, you know, minute to minute, wall to wall bookings for his one client as Ray's handler. But it all goes awry when he schedules a cute little surprise elevator pitch session for Ray at Jenner's. And Ray, I think rightfully so, is like, I did not prepare for this. And also, I don't even want to do this. I just want to hang out with Nora and like run my own business. And Chester is just so distraught. This is like the end of the world. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to him.
Ray kicked his sandcastle.
Until Iris's insightful, incisive, incredible interview that we get like 30 seconds of, in which Ray agrees, we'll see what happens next year. I guess I won't retire or whatever. And then Chester's like, I'm a little bit relieved by this. My hero is brought halfway back from the dead. So that was the amazing A plot of this story. I'm just kidding. I just randomly started with that story. I don't know why. the other side of Central City is CCC Media, because over the summer or over the last year or however many months it's been, Iris got Sue to like buy out the building. So now they have like a whole big ass headquarters for Central City Citizen.
Sue was her sugar mama.
Exactly. Sue was her sugar mama. They got a bunch of employees. Legra's getting a promotion. Iris is a podcaster. It's just like a whole multi-level operation going on now. But for some reason, I don't know. I understand like Allegra's like her little meow meow, but it is also very funny that she's like, Allegra, you will be the new like editor in chief, basically. I don't know what she is. She's like the assistant to the editor in chief. Even though there is this person who's
editor.
Yeah, there you go. There's this person who's a war correspondent that's been doing it for 10 years, but you are more qualified because you are the voice of the people.
You are a citizen. You grew up here.
Exactly. You are a Central City citizen. You have the voice.
And that out trumps a Pulitzer Prize winning war journalist
and
an Ivy grad.
And again, I am on both sides here because like, I'm like, I understand why I also would be miffed if Allegra was my boss, but... Right. They're so fucking rude to her for no reason, no damn reason. And they're like, well, we're just going to do what Iris wants, which is not what Iris wants, because Iris literally put you in charge. So that's what she wants. But we will just go against that. But then Iris gives a pep talk as she is wont to do, and Allegra steps into her power, and she shows them who is boss, and they begrudgingly give her good articles. And Allegra also tells Iris her article was good. Thank you. I'm just glad that CCC has moved up from one article a day to, like, 10 articles a day. It's really great.
Number 4 journalist in the nation, exactly. Here we come.
Yes! And now onto the actual A-plot, which is just, like, Barry's leveled up. He's so leveled up. He's, like, max levels. It just can't be any more levels.
He's levelist.
Exactly.
Level to the max.
And his current fight is against the Royal Flush Gang, who have also leveled up. Wow. Since their time in, like, season 1 of Arrow or whatever, they have better
levels. They were so corny in season 1 of Arrow that in, right. like, the early Flash seasons that I am okay with this leveling up.
Exactly. They're great. Much better now. Except that they can't stop with the puns. So many right. puns. There's a crazy amount of puns. I kept waiting for them to be connected to Despero. It turns out they were not. But Barry shows his stuff, and then Despero shows up in an unconnected way. And he's like, it is time for me to kill the Flash. To save the people. To save the people, I must kill the Flash. And Barry's like, that's not how it works. And Despero's like, it is how it works. I will show you a vision. We can't really show you all the vision, because we don't have the budget. It's season 8. But trust me, the vision is so... massive that it will show you why you cannot live any longer. And the Barry's like, oh my god, that sucks. Someone in my costume is definitely destroying the world, and it has to be me. That is my butt. I recognize it. And then everyone's like, no, we can't look like your butt. I don't know what we're gonna do. But basically, he strikes a deal with Despero, like, 7 days after you watch this video, you will die in 7 days. Unless you can show me. Exactly. Unless you can show me that you're a better man. So stay tuned for part 2, where we find out if that happens. Oh, yeah. Also, even though Ray, you know, retired from atoming, he atoms again to help Barry with Despero, and we love that for them. So, what struck Joy in this episode?
I found myself enjoying this episode probably more than I thought I would, just because I was not expecting very much from it, which I guess is a good thing. It was just very... energetic. The lighting was better. The characters were out and about instead of being stuck in Star Labs, because, like, season 7 got really grim in that respect. Like, they didn't go outside at all because of COVID, and now that I guess we're all settled into COVID and everybody's vaccinated, it feels nice to actually not be in the lab so often. It was so refreshing. I loved seeing all the leveling up, especially with, like, Barry and Iris, because, like, they've come such a long way since we saw them last season. Iris has a whole, like, the fact that they built a new set for her is amazing. Love that for her. Love that she has so many new employees. Love that she is actually, like, she's podcasting now, because everybody wants to podcast like we do.
We are living the dream.
We are living the dream. So podcasts and, like, interviewing high profile people, giving us the lowdown on, like, what happened with Kramer and what she's been up to. And I like the fact that they kept her around, because, you know, she seems like a character who is really going down the route of redemption in a lot of ways. And I like the fact that, like, Iris is sort of tied to, you know, where she is now, and seeing where Ray is now as well. I feel like this was one of Ray's best episodes in general in the Arrowverse. It was nice to catch up with him and see what he's been up to since leaving the Legends behind, especially for those who watch that show as well. And just kind of getting to see how you adjust to leaving behind time traveling constantly. So that was really great. And just, like, all the character dynamics. I loved, like, seeing, you know, between Chester and Ray, and Iris and Chester, and Barry and Chester, and Barry and Ray. And even, like, Barry and Iris paralleling each other with regards to, like, their mentorship, like Barry talking to Ray and convincing him that, like, oh, it doesn't have to be the end. You can strike a balance. And then Iris giving her a little pep talk to Allegra and telling her that, yes, she can do it. She can be a supervising editor and do a damn good job, because, you know, Iris mentor her. So all of that was just really fantastic. And I think that they struck a real balance with giving us the lowdown, what's been going on, seeing, like, just how powerful Barry can actually be when, you know, people aren't sitting there talking in his ear. And, you know, outside the excessive leveling up visually, that was just beautiful. Like, just I don't know what he did. Like, he vibrated at some point. And he split himself in two. That was really cool. The way that he took down the Royal Flush Gang was great. And they were just so, they were so tacky, but I loved it. So yeah, all of that stuff was just great. And I feel, I actually found myself laughing quite a bit just because it was just, it was like dumb humor. And even like Barry and Iris being interrupted by Ray and just, you know, and they're like, you know, just the humorous stuff, like Barry's like shaking his head at her with Ray's drink. And he's like, don't drink. And then she's like, don't you dare leave me. And he just like bolts from there. It reminded me a lot of the scene with when Chester found them up.
Yeah.
And she ditched him. So it's like now he's ditching her. So all of that stuff was great. And like the Despero stuff I'll get to later. But I sort of like that it wasn't just Despero here, because we sort of get a feel for what's happening now before diving into what's going to happen in the future or whatever. So in general, I think this had a lot of energy, and I like the vibe that I hope the season hopefully stays with for now.
I get that, because I was like confused, because I was like, you know, in the beginning when we saw the future, it's like Armageddon, and then we get to the present, it's just like, we're leveling up. You know, wait a minute, what's going on? But yeah, I Iris West Allen, self-made media mogul, I was sparked with so much joy to see all the things. I wish we could have seen, you know, in the background of season 7, you know, her like, oh, maybe I want to start a podcast, or, you know, oh, let's look into hiring more people, or at least a conversation with Sue about, hey, let me buy you a building, you know, something like that. But, you know, seeing all the fruit of that labor is also like just really nice and refreshing. And this episode specifically centered Iris very firmly in that journalist position, and what we are to assume to be a very integral role into this 5-part series. They're establishing that early with her journalism. I like the podcast with Kramer because, you know, it's Kramer's first role after she played kind of an antagonist or a villain the previous season. And now that she's a metahuman, how has that changed her point of view on, you know, what she, how she's going to move forward, and how it's changing how they police metahumans and stuff like that. And I thought it was really funny that when she met up with Barry at a crime scene and he was acting all like cagey, because he's like, how does your mimic powers work? Because he was afraid that she's going to like mimic his flash powers without knowing it. And she's like, do you have a problem? Do I sense an ism here, Barry? Like, do you have a problem with me being a metahuman? I thought it was like really funny considering that Barry was a Flash, but
he's like, no, ma'am.
No. But, and I like that, you know, we get Barry at a crime scene. He's doing his work. I like that we have Iris interviewing Ray and just getting out there. We're seeing her move more into, I mean, now that her business is up and running, we're seeing her move more into other mediums of journalism, like podcasting, like the interview that she did at the con. The fact that the con people reached out to her and was like, hey, can you come over and do this and blah, blah, blah. So it's really great to see. I even thought like the whole conflict that Allegra was having with the other journalists was kind of fun. Like I too agree that, you know, I would have issues with Allegra being my boss when I have like these many accolades. But I did like that. I liked Iris's conversation with Allegra about why she chose her, because it felt kind of like a Cat Grant, toughen up buttercup type moment,
right,
that Cat might have with Kara. That Iris is like, look, you know you're good. You have no problem telling me when my writing is shit. So I don't see why you are nervous about these other writers and telling them that they're writing is shit. So she's like, you know you have your power. Just do it. Which I thought was really kind of, it's like a really strong moment for that dynamic. And it's something, that relationship with Allegra, that we've been wanting consistently for a while. So it was nice to see that here. I love the Royal Flush Gang leveling up, because I just thought, you know, they weren't that great initially. So I think like adding the superpowers, and it's a completely different Royal Flush Gang. It's a different family. I didn't mind all the card puns, like superhero comics are corny anyway, so all of the card puns just kind of make it very comic booky. But I like all of their different powers and how they work together as a family. And I liked when talking about like Barry's leveling up, how he, especially in that scene where he's just like slow-mo walking, it's like very cocky Barry, and he's just like pointing people in different directions, moving so fast. He's like, "You changed your mind after I read your thoughts. That's not fair." You know, all that kind of stuff. It was very fun.
They did bring back, I think it was in that scene, the speed thinking thing.
So that was great. So I liked all that. I thought that was a fun little villain. I think Despero's CGI looks great. Like when he levels up to his alien self. Right.
I would like to think that the lack of marketing was like, let's shuffle the money so that we can make the CGI and special effects look beautiful.
Yeah. So maybe, because it's working out so far. So Barry being competent in his jobs, Iris building her empire. I thought Ray was like nice and refreshing. I thought, you know, his obliviousness to Wes Allen, you know, trying to be like romantic or whatever. It was really made it like lighthearted, and like that scene where they had to go and she's like, "Oh no, that's a bracelet." Like nice little moments like that. So it was nice, like it was very light. It was not what I was expecting, but it was a nice like light kind of episode.
I agree. I really enjoyed it as a return, you know, or an easing into this kind of like not so crossover. And I like that it's kind of a crossover, but with the focus on Flash, because that has literally never happened before. So that's nice. True. and I agree with you, like the Royal Flush Gang to start off were cheesy, but like the right amount of cheesy. Like it was just fun to like keep track of their puns. And also it was like a very self-aware thing. Like they're saying the line like, you know, like, "Oh, look at me, make me a pun." Exactly. So it was cute. And I definitely enjoyed seeing Barry leveled up, getting to see, you know, the speed thinking, like you said, getting to see him splitting himself, and the fact that they were able to save the fight so that it is just Barry. And then we get like one team up with Brandon Routh's Ray, instead of just having a bunch of heroes getting knocked out.
Mm-hmm. I love that Ray did the Superman shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a nice little Easter egg.
Parallels, Easter eggs, callbacks, all of it. Especially like even from the opening scene where it was Barry and Caitlin, and I was like, but I liked that she said that Frost was just like off doing whatever the hell, like eat, pray, love. So I was like, oh, good, no Frost in this episode. We're gonna have to deal with that. And that she just like,
but you do have to deal with her for like four more additional minutes.
Yes, but then her like announcing that she's like gonna find love again and discarding Julian and Jay as people that she dated. She's like, ever since Ronnie.
That's true. Technically she didn't date Julian, right? She turned him down.
That's funny. Oh.
But I was like, exactly, only Ronnie counts. I am with you. So yeah, even that I was like, all right, cool. Plus, I mean, even though it's petty, I did not, you know, I have to say it was a joy that she was only in like two scenes, even though her first scene was very long. It was worth it. Iris was in the amount of time that she should be in. I also love seeing, again, even though I would obviously have preferred to have seen the growth of Iris' story from season one to now, I like that this is where she is now, because it feels, you know, if we had actually followed the trajectory, it would be correct. And it is so nice to see her in her element as the boss, getting to be the face of the company and being respected by these bitches who are being rude to Allegra, right? Because even though they are so rude, they were like, we're just going to do what Iris would want. Like, this is obviously quality work, deserving
of that.
I was like, all right, cool. Because it's like, obviously she has built a name for herself as someone who's, right, you know, on the front lines or like whatever. So I really like that. And like you said too, like the fact that they would invite her or they would ask her to come to interview Ray, like, you know, you're getting respect on Iris's name, as you should. While I was confused, I did like the Chester and Ray dynamic, especially at first, because it was like, of course they would be buddy-buddy. Like, that just seems like the perfect match. And then even getting to hear Ray talk about Nora, and about his life post Legends, I thought was really nice. I agree that it was one of the stronger episodes for him. And I love the little, like, you know, it's not even an Easter egg, but like pointing to the storyline in Legends where he feels bad because he hasn't heard from Nate, right? But he doesn't know that the Legends are currently Wave Riderless, trapped in time, cannot talk to him. And that is why he hasn't heard from Nate. So I keep wanting to call him Nick because that's his name. And Nate and Nick are just so similar. So I'm like, which one is his real name? And which one is his character name? But anyway, all of that I thought was nice continuity, which is something that crossovers lack often, and that just Flash in general, when connecting to other shows, lacks. So that's nice. I really loved the Allegra and Iris dynamic. I definitely, like you guys said, loved Iris being in a mentorship position to Allegra and kind of giving her that tough love that she was robbed of in like episode 17 because they killed off her mentor.
R.I.P. Mason!
Exactly. We miss you, Mason. But anyway, it's nice to get to see her, like, the roles kind of reversed and her helping shape Allegra as a future, the journalist of tomorrow or whatever. Yes, very nice and very cute. Even Ray interrupting them was very cute. I like all of that. I also was concerned when we first met Despero. I was like, is he just going to be a redhead? He's not going to be red? But then he did turn red and I was happy. And I did think it looked good. I thought the CGI like was very limited, but was good for like, you know, just using it in small doses. Better than like such a level up from the last time they tried to make a big person with Sparsa, right?
Oh my God, yes. So, even the CGI team is leveled up for this season.
Exactly. So thank goodness. I feel like that is all. There was just a lot. I think there was a lot to like. So thumbs up. Oh yeah. I mean, just to add on to the, like that moment where Kristen is like, do you have a problem with me being a meta? I like that she's in that position now because she used to be the one with the problem. But also I love that it made me realize that not everyone in the world knows that Barry is the Flash. Because, like, later on in that episode, he just tells...
Actually,
I am Flash.
He's like, let me like, take off my mask for you.
Yeah.
I want you to look me in my human face, in my eyes.
Exactly. So when she was asking if he had a problem, I was like, why would she think that? He's the Flash. And then I was like, oh, maybe she doesn't know? Is that possible? So that was a moment of joy for me personally. He kept a secret from one person. All right.
She'll not find out long. By the end of the season.
Yeah, it's been not for long.
What did not spark joy?
I too would have liked to see more of Iris's building towards Central City Citizen Media. What a mouthful, right? Before, yeah. And like season seven could have had, yeah. Season 7 could have had a lot more of that because it did feel very limited with regards to her journalism last season. We didn't really get too much of it. And there was a lot going on, but there's not so much going on that they couldn't have included tiny bits of it every episode. Like, I feel like the show has kind of gone downhill in terms of continuity with certain, like, once it picks up on the main plot, it sort of tends to forget everything else mm-hmm. about the character stuff. So I would like that to not happen anymore, but we could have seen a little bit more of that. But I am happy with where she is now. As much as I know the Caitlin scene, it did go on for very, very long. Other than to like just to say that Killer Floss dating, and that's encouraging me to date too. I don't feel like it needed to be that length. And also, like, doesn't she see Barry at Star Labs all the time? Like, do they not? I guess this confirms they don't really talk like that over the last few months. So that didn't need to be.
They have nothing to say without
Cisco. They have nothing to say to each other. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I feel like that scene was because Cisco's not there.
Well,
yeah,
I guess,
Barry,
you know,
like, we have to throw Barry in there. Yeah.
Look at us. Who would have thought?
I didn't horribly mind it because I'm like, oh, I guess this would have been Cisco's scene, but Cisco's not here anymore. So whatever. But it did feel like they don't really know what to do with Caitlin and what's her face, Cecile, right now, because they're just sort of there. Like, we got Barry and Iris with Chester and Allegra, and I feel like those are the two core characters with regards to like the plot and also connecting personally with right now. So it doesn't seem like they have too much to do. I'm sure that probably won't be the case down the line, but it felt like they were, their services were not needed in this episode. I would also like to know where Joe is, because everyone's concerned that this man is dead, but hopefully he'll be in the season. But I just would like to know where he is, besides the whole weird scene with Cecile and Chester about death and not mentioning it and her getting really sad. So I don't know what was going on there. And it just in general, it would have been slightly more interesting if we had seen, like, the beginning scene for Armageddon, like the introduction of Despero didn't really do anything for me. It was just like people in the streets.
Pedestrian Armageddon.
Yeah, it was a very pedestrian Armageddon. I was like, okay, so there's people fighting in the streets. I'm like, I don't see why this is a big deal. Like, this could be stopped, you know, for him to, like, go back in time. And also because it's 2031, right? So, like, Barry and Iris mentioned, I was like, the kids, oh, come back and forth every once in a while. And they're from 2049. So I was like, clearly Armageddon was stopped. So I don't see what the problem is here. You know what I mean? So, you know, timeline wise, it's like, okay, that's an interesting choice. If you had come from like 2055 or something, maybe I would have understood, but whatever. That's all.
That's a good point, actually. You know, maybe they will explain it. Maybe something happened. Maybe the kids coming back that last time threw off the timeline.
Always.
Because didn't Fawn help in that situation too?
Yes,
he did. So maybe that did throw off the timeline.
True.
Who knows? Awesome. I know y'all didn't care about it and y'all thought it was cute. That scene in the beginning was too damn long. It had no business being that long. Like, oh, even if it was cute. Even if, talk like it, I don't care.
I didn't think it was cute. And you said I like that she cut.
It was too damn long. Even if it was her and Cisco, that's too damn long. Like, I don't really care that Barry and Caitlin went out for coffee, because people do that. They go out for coffee. But we didn't need like four continuous scenes of them like walking to Jitters. And Jitters, the split of Barry's mission and Caitlin watching said mission at Jitters, and then Barry's coming back to Jitters where they continue the scene. There's too many scenes. And the whole time, it's not even like different topics. She's just complaining about why Frost has a boyfriend and she doesn't. And it's like all that to say that I think I'm going to start dating again. Okay, good for you. This could have been an email. It did not need to be. This long, I feel like that the whole thing was just like her setup for her season 8, and I feel like that could have waited until next year.
I'm gonna get a boyfriend,
right?
And that could have waited. Her setup is like, oh, it's probably gonna be Despero, like, right?
She's I didn't need a crossover. Oh my god, if she fell in love with Despero, I just would, you know, it's the end for you. Sorry, yeah, but I just, you know, all of that just to say that she wanted to date again was just like ridiculous amount of time. I feel like it felt like, you know, there's a minimum time limit that she was contractually obligated to be in the episode, and that's the only thing they needed her for, because she didn't say anything in the Star Lab scene really. And so that was kind of it. And I get, like, I also agree with like Cecile not really having a place. She's just kind of randomly in Star Lab. Like, don't you have a job? Like, aren't you supposed to be like an attorney doing cases or something? I thought that I just like misheard something, because I also did not understand the emotion and why Chester was so like, oh my god, I did not mean to say that to you. It did seem like Joe was dead, even though we know that he signed on for season 8. That scene needs to be explained, because it's weird. Like, I don't know, did Joni die off screen and we don't know about it? I know she can't be upset about
the West family.
Like, I know she can't be upset about what's his Godspeed dying, because he didn't even know him that long. So like, what? What is it?
I was like, is Joni dead? Is that, yeah. I called her Josie, but I, you know, somebody they can actually kill off screen, but I don't know. That would be sad.
Yeah.
That'd be messed up. I hope they didn't do that.
But yeah, hopefully that's not the case. But I don't know what her issue is, you know. That the Caitlin scene, just like the longevity of it, just pissed me off mostly. Oh, and it's like, it's, you know, I guess as much as I love, yeah, I already talked about like Iris and leveling up and wishing that we had seen the actual build up. But I think aside from that, yeah, the long ass scene was my main issue. So that's all for me.
Yeah, with the Irish thing, it's like, it's hard because like I could complain and be like, Irish should have had more time and not Allegra. But it's, the thing is, like, Iris wouldn't be in that position, right? Where she is now, they would respect her and they would treat her ideas with respect as they
right,
should.
Right, because she's paying
which
them.
They did in the episode. She's paying them, she owns it, she earned it, you know, so right. Like, all that makes sense. And so I can't even be like, oh, they should have switched the storylines. But it's just like a retroactive anger that, like, this is a storyline we could have had for Iris in the past that we did not have because they didn't care about journalism until now, suddenly, in season whatever the fuck we are. Is 7, 8?
Oh. I yes. will say that TV Line had the, because I agreed with TV Line about, you know, they had their little rundowns. One was about leveling up, which they said way too much in the episode. Yes. The other one was about, like, Allegra's advice when she did, you know, stand up to them. It's like, talk to the CEO, then talk to the janitor and ask him what his side. And it's like, that's not really, it's kind of like questionable
right,
editorially.
Right. Like, I don't know that the janitor specifically is who you need to talk to. But like, I sort of like get, like I understand what they're trying to say, right? Like, you need to like get on the ground level, right?
Yeah.
But the way that they had her say it was like,
she's still young, right? Guys. She's still young.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's more like, it's not really about Allegra, right? It's about the fact that the writers don't.
Exactly.
So they were like, this sounds right. We're going to have them say this. So that, I'm sure, like, yes, like, going from one, like, 1.5 employees and one article a day in last season to now being like 2 million hits and this whole building is a bit suspicious, but I don't care. This is not anti that. I'm very happy that Iris is where she is. I just, like, we had, like you've already said, we should have gotten to see that process. It should have been every season.
Andrea is shaking in her boots.
Exactly!
Somewhere.
That's why Andrea was like, fuck, Iris is ahead of us.
The other thing that I meant to say about, like, and I will wait for you to say it because I know that you're going to talk about Chester and Ray and why that was weird, but right. I will have stuff to say about that
I mean,
as well.
Just basically, I just thought it was like, I get that Chester idolizes Ray, right? And he has like this vision of like what his hero should be like, but it felt like the show agreed with Chester. Like, wow.
Right.
Ray,
like, Ray didn't even raise his voice. Like, he was very calm and, like, polite about it. And it was kind of, like, rude of Chester to be, like, planning his whole itinerary without asking Ray.
That's true.
First.
Exactly. That's not the thing, too. Like, why would you get these people's hopes up and have them go all the way out to pitch? Exactly. To pitch to a man that doesn't know he's getting pitched to. Like, of course he's going to be like, what?
It's like he was guilted into continuing to do something when he wasn't even thinking about doing that thing.
Right. So I thought that was really weird. I thought that
Chester's reaction was also super dramatic.
Yeah, and he was like rude to Ray after, like when he was all like
happy
he ran
away.
Yeah, and he was happy to have Barry on the live, and then Ray comes and he ends the live. Like, what kind of? That was such a baby. Like, what a baby. I would think that if you idolize this person and then they let you down in that way, you'd probably just be more like, I don't know. Well, you wouldn't behave that way, basically, is what I'm saying. Unless you are a child, like Chester, who thinks that, like, Ray owes you something. I don't know. It was very weird. I'm, like, okay with, like, how it ended, but it still felt like I didn't really know what they were, I guess because it's not like they're going to have Ray as part of their life in the future, so it's fine to be like, we introduced this idea that he was giving it up, and now we're like, no, he's going to have it all. He's a strong, independent woman. So
I feel like it would be like one thing if Ray had like promised him that he would do stuff, and then like he's like, you know what, I'm actually kind of tired. I don't want to do it.
Then you know
that would have made sense. But
instead it was like,
Chester was doing team too much. Like, exactly. I have done everything for you. Don't even have to breathe. I have that programmed for you. Like, come on.
Yeah. So I don't know. That was weird. But it was, you know, cute. And then, of course, like you guys already said, what the hell was the Cecile thing? I heard people saying, like, oh, maybe it's about her mom. But she just told Barry that, the mom story, that then she, like, ended up in an asylum and, like that. But I was like, that was, like, 40 years ago, A.
Right.
And B, why would Chester even know that? Like, I don't think that is what it is. So I really feel like because it didn't feel like something that they had planted there as, like, a mystery. You know, it felt like something that they thought that we were supposed to know and we did not because they like forgot to include the scene. So I don't know if they're gonna. They'll have to go back to it if it's something that's part of her story this season. But it definitely feels like it got left on the cutting room floor, and it was very weird. Mm. Also, we have not stopped. The Cecile is just here because Joe is not here, and it is very weird. Like, I like Cecile as much as the next person who isn't an Iris stan, because most Iris stans don't like Cecile. But I like Cecile as much as like just a casual person who doesn't have strong feelings might. But it is so strange every time she just is there in Star Labs, and I'm like, what is your job? Aren't you like freeing, rescuing metas, or like prosecuting people who hate metas? I don't remember what your job is. Like, why aren't you doing it? And it's just so obvious that it's because Jethiel Martin cannot come to the phone right now. So I would, and I know I can't make him come to the phone. I know he's, you know, the man has to rest and relax. I understand, but I don't like it. I would have at least liked to know where Joe was too. Mm-hmm. But that ties back to thinking he was dead momentarily because of the Chester moment. Other than that, I agree with you guys that the Armageddon just did not feel very Armageddon-y. But I'm also like, why would everyone be so quick to believe this thing? Like, even if you saw like video proof or, I don't know, mind melding proof that Barry was destroying the world, wouldn't you just be like, I mean, no, it sounds fake. And of course they were like, it sounds fake, but they're like, it sounds fake, but also just to be sure, we should like check on this. But at the same time, they were all super chill about it. They're like, we gotta check on this. But like, we know it's not true, so we're just kinda like, okay. We'll check back with you in 7 days. We'll see how it goes. Just like, I feel like, I don't know.
It's very The Ring, right? It's like 7 days.
Yes, it is very The Ring. But it felt both simultaneously like it's too dramatic because, of course, Barry would never do this, so, like, duh. And also just, like, too chill. Like, I'm like, I feel like we need to ring the alarm. I
felt chill about it. Like, why are you giving him 7 days? Like,
exactly. I mean, I guess he's got, like, 20 years, right? Or 10 years, 11 years.
I guess so.
So he's like, I guess we got time. Like, I could kill you in 2029, probably. But I would rather do it now. Anyway, do we have feedback?
We do. Anita is back. Says, yes! Welcome. Hi, ladies. Welcome back to the Flash Recaps. So I got the episode's theme, which is about mentoring and leveling up. Love the long shot of CCC Media and Iris as a podcast host. Love Iris as a mentor to Legger, who needed to do some serious flexing to get more experienced writers in line. The exposition after catching the Royal Flush Gang was peak cornball. And that's cool for a lazy watch, classic Flash. If Despero is giving Barry a week to show he doesn't have a trace of evil in him, how is Team Flash going to explain Savitar and the whole blood work persona? What role will all of that tech at the con play in the season? Did you peep Tannhauser cryotherapy with a booth at the con? I did not. Good eyes. And wonder if they'll factor into another snooze fest Killer Frost Kalen episode. Of course they will. And Chester using some prototype tech to assess the sitch. I wonder if any of that tech will factor into later storylines. Explain to me why the story panned down with a 4-minute coffee session to feed a crack ship fan base, but West Allen fans get a scant 50 seconds, maybe to reconnect over a pizza dinner at the loft. This show's inability to ever get its priorities in order did not spark joy, and for that matter, neither did the lack of Joe West. I only hope they'll make it up to us. Suwara says, the Flash's return with Armageddon Part 1 was overall pretty good. Best part by far was seeing Boss Iris in action as the editor-in-chief of The Citizen. She's come so far, and we actually had time and space to get to this story, given to the storyline, and how they're developing. While I appreciated what we got last season, we needed far more of it, and hopefully Season 8 will continue to deliver. Loved Allegra learning to stand up for herself, but also LMAO, those journalists would have been fired immediately for such a display of insubordination. Like, seriously, I would never dream of speaking to an editor that way. But even though that was contrived as a concept, I love how Legger stood up for herself with Iris' mentorship and reminded them of what The Citizen is all about and asserted that she deserves to be there. More of these journalist storylines, please. The Despero plot is nonsensical, in my opinion. I like the actor, who, by the way, was Vincent Van Gogh on Doctor Who.
Yes, and he's amazing.
Yes, he was.
He was great. The lines he said were bordered on gibberish. While Grant acted well with what he had to say, I just haven't bought this being Barry's worst day yet, but perhaps it's being saved for the next episodes. It was great to have Ray back. I thought his plot of Chester was overall good, but honestly, some of the writing for it was too thin. Looking forward to the rest. Ooh, Sean, you're still here. He has flash.
Yay!
Flash feedback. Candace looks so good. Oh my God, marry me, queen. Allegra, please hire me as a coffee boy at Central City Citizen. Wes Allen really outsold in chemistry, huh? Golly, I feel so alone. Not Ray being cock blocker. let Wes Allen make their babies. I still remember him cock blocking Avalanche in season 3 of Legends, but it's nice to see Brandon on the screen again. I like the writing for him this episode. It did kind of feel like his exit from Legends was rushed, and the Flash writers are using this crossover to tie up loose ends. Is John the director of the DEO, or is it Alex? Why won't they call John when he's part of their league table? They could have just said that they would call DEO and Alex coming over to say that John sent her. That's true, because Caitlin said that she was going to call Alex.
Yeah, and he's got powers, so I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Good points.
I'm so confused about the storyline, so I don't actually have any predictions. So this dude needs to kill Barry, but decided not to because current Barry has a good heart. Barry literally served himself up on a silver platter. That desperate something. Pink alien comes from the future saying it's of the utmost importance to kill him, so just slice off his head. This isn't some Green Knight situation and you ain't Sir Gawain. Yeah. I'm so bored of antagonists thinking that they are righteous and don't kill over having some twisted higher moral ground. Just be unhinged for once. And then Sonia says, so glad to have the flashback again. And for the... Okay, yeah. So glad to have the flashback again. What was with that Snowberry coffee scene? Like, this show really shoehorns Danielle Panabaker into scenes where she literally has no place. Right. I love seeing Central City Citizen being a basic media empire like Iris has a huge office staff and a podcast. This is amazing and now makes more sense with Supergirl showing CCC being high in the ratings than before when it was just one or two articles that Iris wrote. Love the scene where Allegra was like that old dude about one of the reporters and Iris is like, okay, that guy is literally my age. Like funny. Millennial versus Gen Z. Speaking of people being shoehorned into the plot for no reason, did Cecile have any reason for being in the scenes she was in? I'm thinking not like this show really needs to get rid of both Danielle's, honestly. Nice reference to Nora and Bart visiting often from the future, as well as hints that Wes Allen are trying to have a baby. Fucking Ray Palmer being such a cockblock and being so oblivious about it, lol. Nice to see the Royal Flush Gang and a reference to the fact that they are the first metacriminals and they struck while Barry was in a coma at the start of the show. Why did Barry act so weird about saying he was in a coma? Oh, this is about when he was talking to Kramer. Says Barry awkwardly trying to figure out if Kramer would ever accidentally mimic his powers and Kramer being like, oh my God, do you have a problem with me being a meta? Why did he act so weird about saying he was in a coma when talking about the Royal Flush Gang with Kramer? Like, wasn't that common knowledge to the CCPD? Oh my God, Allegra is in way over her head with the leadership role and these other reporters are just walking all over her. Iris telling Allegra that she has what it takes to be a good reporter and that she's the voice of people was great and how that brings heart to her stories and the stories from other reporters that she fixed up. Nice to see Iris taking on more of a reporter role this season with the interview with Ray and a podcast with Kramer and the media empire she's building, hoping it leads to a Pulitzer. Like, if this show ends without Iris getting a Pulitzer, I will be so mad. Love seeing Adam and Flash take on Despero together and also the classic Superman shirt scene with Brandon. Despero saying that Barry causes Armageddon in 2031 is crazy. I can't wait to see what happens. Nice reference to Alex from Supergirl. Mentioned of needing to contact someone to see what kind of alien Despero is. Prediction. Despero mentions Flash Barry being a villain who pretends to be a hero. So let's take a step further and say that he's Thawne impersonating Barry. So she also thinks this. I seem to recall
you're
seeing
so Grant. Wise.
Yes. With Alex in the next episode, I hope it's set in a time that's after Kara's editor-in-chief of Catco, and it's already come out to the world of Supergirl, so we can get some reference to that. I don't think we're going to get a reference, because, like, Barry was like, not Barry, Grant was like, when in some interview when they asked, well, why doesn't Kara, are we going to get any references to Kara or Tyler Superman? He's like, no.
So sad. Like everyone's crossing over except the Supes. They can stay on their own shows.
He's like, we don't explain it. Sorry.
Tragic.
Oh, well. Do we have predictions outside of obviously the Barry in 2031 or whatever is just Thawne wearing Thawne. a berry mask.
But I really like that twist because it's Thawne. So he's like, if I can't defeat you, I will send someone who will, and then I will show up to laugh at you. No, I
who's Caitlyn? Who's Caitlyn gonna fall? Caitlyn will fall in love with evil Barry.
Oh my god!
Thawne with Barry's face.
I just want it to be a woman, but I know it won't be. So
yeah. That would mean they'd have to bring a new guy onto the show, and I don't want that to happen.
Who would you like? I don't even know who. How that would even?
I don't know.
Yeah,
unless she starts, there's like a love triangle between her, Frost, and what's his face. I don't know.
Ew.
Oh my god, ew. Ew.
I hated it as soon as I said it.
Yeah, and then he would be like, we can share. Like, it's not like you're literally in the same body. It doesn't matter. Okay, anyway.
Let's move on, because I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, moving on from that, we will go on to our next show, it's side B, Special Protocol / Down with Team Spirit, starting with Legends of Tomorrow, Deus Ex Latrina, directed by Nico Sash and written by Ray Utrecht and Mercedes Valle. In 2214 Vancouver, Bishop builds his own Waverider with schematics from his Gideon. He and his Ava clone assistant become Time Masters, travel to 1925, and destroy the Legends Waverider against his Gideon's advice, and correct the resulting aberrations by using the Ava clone technology to build robot replacements. Gideon ejects Ava and creates a Bishop robot to live out his life so he can continue chasing the Legends, though he becomes reluctant. Meanwhile, Davy's time machine breaks, so Astra and Spooner help Sarah and Ava express their frustrations. Nate decides to move into the totem. I love this. Just like, Nate decides to move into the totem. That was the storyline. Well, Gary and Gideon bond over their experiences as humans. Davies tells Zari that he built the time machine to rescue his fallen lover, Alan. That spelled weird, but Alan. And allies from World War One. Bayrod learns they're in 1986 Chernobyl on the day of the meltdown. Davies broadcasts an evacuation warning, causing an aberration that alerts Bishop's Gideon that the Legends are able to repair the time machine and escape. What brought joy?
You know what? I like this twist with Bishop. Like, him coming back this season is just like, why? But it makes sense how the whole Waverider plot, unfurled. And I like that we get to see it from the opposite side of view from, like, what happened in the beginning of the season until now. And I like that he gets in over his head with this Gideon, and the fact that, you know, we get to see a comparison between our Gideon and Gideon if Rip hadn't programmed her to prioritize the Legends, and how she's very, like, cut and dry. I like that she and Assistant Ava annoyed each other. To the point where, you know, Gideon just had to, like, get rid of her efficiently. I don't know why Gideon put Bishop Robot back in the timeline. She just could have sent Bishop back and had efficient Bishop Robot here with her. I don't know. I felt like that was, a mistake on her part. But I think it's a good, especially, like, when he realized, because he's very pity, narcissistic and self-absorbed in the beginning, when he's just like, I want to build a time machine to destroy the Legends. And he thinks that, just makes this big rash move, and he thinks that it solved all his problems. And Gideon's like, well, now we have to clean this mess up, and we're going to do what I want to do, and all this kind of stuff. So I like that it is more than, he bit off more than he can chew. And not only that, when he figures out that he is the bad guy, like, he is the villain of the story, and he feels bad about it, like, the Legends are the good guys and he was the bad guy. I like that, he was depressed a little bit when he found out that Gideon had cloned him and sent him back, so now he doesn't really matter to history. So you would hope that after the end of the season, maybe he would truly have turned a new leaf, and be, like, help to the Legends, like, later on. And I my stream like cut off at the end of this episode, so I know that him like putting a black zone over the bathroom was very smart. And I knew that was gonna come back into play, but him using the toilet as a parachute was also kind of funny. Because I think that like in last season, Gary entered through a toilet, so it's only fair that Bishop exit through a toilet this season. Did his toilet land on the time machine? Like, did he get sucked into their time machine?
He did, yeah.
Okay, so that leads to something funny, because now they're reunited with Bishop, and now he's got to explain to them like what happened and redeem himself again. So I think that sets up a good storyline for him. I liked that. Although I agree with Ava and Sarah that it's like a huge change to make to the timeline to save the people in Chernobyl, I thought it was nice that the Terazi twins and Davies decided to err from history, because you know, what's the point of being able to travel back in time if you don't use it to do something good for humanity? So I thought that was a good change. And it was a good like booster for Davies, who is like incredibly depressing all the time. So it was a good boost for his confidence. I liked Zari having a little therapy session with Gwen Davies to kind of get him to open up and also to like relax and forgive himself a little bit. You know, I think Spooner and Astra handled Ava and Sarah pretty well. Astra was very smart, because she gave Ava an axe. She's like, two birds, one stone. That is my multitasking queen. Give her an axe so she can chop up all the firewood for you, and then your job is done. So go Astra. And that's probably it, because the other stuff was kind of weird, or I didn't like it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I mostly did like this episode. I was really surprised about Dr. Davies, and his backstory was just really sad. I was not expecting that, but I like that he got a chance to, like, we got a chance to learn why he is the way that he is, and why he's just so terrified about everything and harming people, and even why he wanted to build the time machine, because I thought that was really kind of beautiful. It's like, I want to save the man that I love, and so I built this. It was really sweet, and I like that he had that moment with Zari specifically, because it got her to make a new friend and also not talk to Nate the whole time. My petty. But it was just like really fun to see how the episode also like split up all the characters into kind of pairs or trios, and to see how they managed under all of these stresses, like seeing Ava nearly lose it because she just couldn't do this anymore, and her arguing with Sarah over them messing with time too much. Like, I think this is their first major argument since they got married, and mm-hmm. that's been interesting to watch as they continue growing as a couple. And just also having Gideon, it's just really interesting, right? Because like you said, you like the flip of Bishop becoming, you know, a non-antagonist in a way, and having Gideon be the antagonist, which this Bishop created. And then so it's like coming full circle, and that he is now the one on the run from Gideon, who is basically who was it, Zari, who's like, robots are after us or whatever. And I guess this is sort of like robot-esque. So seeing how that plays out was really interesting and fun, because it was also unexpected. And I also like how they turned that around, because Bishop was a very annoying character, even though, you know, the actor just plays him so well. And this will showcase like a new side to Bishop, who we have not seen, and he'll understand why. Like, it's sort of, I guess I'm going to compare it to Doom Patrol, about like the identity thing, because like he thinks he's doing something good for the world, then he becomes something he doesn't want to be, but the beginning wanted. Yes, exactly. He's Madame Rouge in this instance. So it's like really fascinating to see, and how he's going to like try to redeem himself. He's going to try to redeem his future self from doing something that he already did later on, but like something that he doesn't right now at this moment does not want to become that person. So,
and you know what? Oh, this prediction. I was going to say, okay. If he does become that good person, then he wouldn't have done all that shit, and he wouldn't have abducted the legends, and they wouldn't have gotten stuck in 1925, and then they would have blown up the ship, and then they wouldn't have had robots throughout history. So it could, like, at the end, just clean up everything into, like, a little bow and That's restore true. The timeline.
Very true. Reset. And yeah. I think, yeah, that's been really good to see. And even like seeing the, because like even the legends in this instance, Gideon sees them as the villains. And I thought that was really interesting because it's like, well, I mean, they have done a lot of damage to the timeline, and her prime directive is to protect the timeline. So to her, of course, they would be the villains. So it's interesting also to see the setup with this very, you know, robotic Gideon versus like the Gideon that's becoming sort of human, and seeing how that parallels and plays out. So yeah, overall I think it was a strong episode. I really like that Nate Behrad and sorry not Nate Zari Behrad and Davies save the people from Chernobyl, because I thought that was like a really noble thing for them to do, since they were going to be stuck there anyway. They might as well do something that was actually really good for people, because again, they've already fucked up the timeline, might as well just continue to do something useful. So
fuck it for the better.
Exactly. Exactly.
I know this is joy, but even though like I agree with you guys about Chernobyl, like in on principle, and I like the concept of, you know, like, because it's really hard to imagine like you're going through time and you're seeing all these atrocities, and then you don't stop it because the time, you just can't kill the timeline, right? You right. think that, like, the empathetic, the human reaction would be like, no, I have to try to stop it anyway. Right. Even if then the episode would teach you you can't by causing some, you know, whatever. So I'm glad that that was their instinct, and I like that it ties into the fight that Ava and Sarah were having, which also, again, feels realistic. I'm glad that we're going to see, like, some variety in their marriage, and also the growth of their relationship because they're growing, or they're like showcasing more of themselves as individuals, that sometimes they're not always going to agree, even if they are a unit through marriage. But this is, again, it's not, I feel like I have to say it now, even though it's not really, Chernobyl is like so recent. I feel like there are people that like remember Chernobyl, like that were there,
yeah.
Or you know, so I'm like, I feel like I would be, if I was like watching this, and I'd be like, what? I wouldn't like that. Is what I'm saying. I would be a little put off by that. But anyway, I like the principle, though. I like the concept. I did love the Davies storyline. I like his backstory. I hope that he's able to save his dude, because it does feel a little close to the Constantine. I feel guilty for yeah. not saving my dude, but I liked that too. And I hope, you know, we get like, we get a happy ending out of it. It would be my fingers crossed. But I did make him much more relatable. I loved that it was like the Tarazi twins, and especially Zari, who got that out of him. I like that whole unit. I'm glad they're still going to be able to utilize the chemistry between the actors, even if it is in a different way. Because we no longer have Constantine. So that is good. And as May so aptly put it, it does keep Zari away from Nate, even though we then had that other thing. That
happened. But, and then like Nate just yeah. like followed her into.
Yeah. But for a little bit. For a little bit.
I got tired like, of you walking away from me if I was going to join you in the total.
outside of that, you guys definitely, you know, explained the Ava, Gideon, Bishop thing. Well, like, I really like that, how the turntables. I like seeing Bishop as both sides of it. He created his own problem, but he does have the capacity to realize why he was wrong. And that at first he thought the legends were like trying to stop his genius or whatever. And then he realizes that what the legends were doing were stopping him, like saving him from himself. And then he's like, oh my God, they were right all along. So I like that he was just like having this whole realization on his own with his creations, and now Gideon is going to come after him for leaving her to her own devices, or leaving them to their own devices in the first place, because he created Gideon, and now he doesn't want Gideon to do what he wanted Gideon to do in the first place. So so that's going to be fun and interesting. And it certainly gives Gideon, or actress who plays Gideon, Amy Pemberton, I'm sorry, I can never remember your name, plenty to do this season, paying her dues for having been on the show for like 7 seasons now. So we love that. We love that for Amy. Yeah, I also liked how Ava and Spooner handled the marrieds. And overall, I think that it feels like it has more direction. Like, I'm like seeing the propulsion of where we are going more so than in the early episodes. And yes, the toilet was, you know, just like poetic symmetry. We love that. Echoes. That's what George Lucas wanted when he made the prequels of Star Wars. The lines, they rhyme. Okay, anyway. So what did not spark joy?
You know, I do. What did spark joy for me was when the Legends writers tried to write, like, post a, they call them Natari, which, whatever. Nate and Zari tweet on Twitter. I'll link to the comments because I'm like, please tell me that this is not, like, only, you know.
We're the only ones who don't like it.
Yeah. Please tell me that this is not the secondary ship to Avalanche and everyone's just, like, liking it and we just don't. But all the comments are like, no, we don't like this. We don't.
Yes.
So, you know, no one else likes Nate and Zari together either. I don't like that his entire storyline in the episode was pros and cons of should I move into this tiny space or should I not move into it? And there's, like, even when he said yes, Zari's like, you don't have to say yes. You can still think about it. So it's kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. there's still some kind of, like, disconnect or whatever. And I'm just kind of tired of it. Like, I feel like he's going to, because he didn't want to move in at first. And he's like, oh, I did all these pros and cons. He didn't really even do any work about it. He just kind of, like, thought about it for a little bit and then rushed into moving in. I'm just going to feel like we're going to have an episode of him in the totem being like, oh my God, it's so cramped and you blah, 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 blah. I don't know about, you know, it's just like, I'm tired of this. I didn't even want it in the first place. So, like, why are you continuing, you know, whatever. Gary and that's, is that the ship name? Gary and Gideon. Them having, like, Gideon having sex with Gary for, like, the experience was just, like, weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect her to be so explicit about it. We can't get Behrad and Astra or even Spooner and Astra. We can't get anybody in Astra to give any kind of hint of anything. But Gideon will, like, be like, let's have Gideon sex, Gary. Like, yeah. I don't understand. It's like, very weird that they're so explicit with these two, but we can't get, like, also that bugs me, we had, like, a minuscule of a crumb of Behrad flirting with Astra last episode, and this episode, they are just, like, magnets on, like, the, like, you know, same mag repelling each other and going off in different storylines, not to cross, not to look at each other in the eye in the background. I just, you know. Yeah.
That's why you should be on the Spooner and Astro ship.
Well, they didn't get much either.
No, I know.
Yeah, they didn't.
I'm kidding.
They did not.
But that way you could just be angry all the time. Anyway.
I guess one thing I don't understand is this season's obsession with Hoover. Like, this right. man continues to get paid. I don't need to constantly see him.
I want him jobless.
So, like, you know, just constantly seeing robot Hoover, any form of Hoover. I'm just like, okay, it's six episodes in, guys. I need a break. And also, of course, the Nate and Zari stuff. I continue to feel so little about this ship, so frustrated in general, because Zari is with this mediocre man, and, you know, Nate is fine on his own. I don't hate Nate, okay? But I do not like them together. I think Zari deserves better, and I feel like the way that they've been, the writing is also not great for them. Like, the way that they've been navigating this ship is, it feels really awkward, right? Like, we get all of these half-baked conversations about where their relationship is going at least once a season since they got together. And I would finally like it to go somewhere. Like, if Nate is going to go into the totem. I would want him to commit to going into the totem and not like having all this build up only for him to change his mind at the last minute so they can keep Nate around. Something has to happen. Something has to change because it's starting to get very annoying, like just rehashing the same type of conversations. Like, even if they move into the totem, what is that going to do for the relationship that it has not in the past? You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand, but whatever. Also agree about Gideon and Gary. I thought that it was like, I like both characters, and then they started talking. I'm like, oh no, what's going to happen?
I just felt like it was so awkward.
I thought they were going to be
like a pair. Like, that was obvious. But then she's like, let's have sex. I'm like, oh my God.
It's like, Gideon, you have only been human for such a short time.
And then they didn't even make it like funny afterwards. Like, oh my God, there are so many more fluids than I expected. You know, something that could have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It just sort of came out of nowhere for me. I was like, okay, I guess
it came out of nowhere and then it did nothing.
Exactly. So I was like, I could have done without it, but alas.
Yeah, I don't even like the idea of the pairing of Gideon and Gary. I don't know why. I'm just like I kind of get it, but I'm also like, no. And it just it just feels like we just pair everyone up except certain people that we won't pair up. I don't know. And yes, I agree, it was like explicit, but like the only thing I liked about it was it Ava's line where she was like, it looks like they like got into a fight with a gooseberry bush and lost. Yeah. That was cute, but otherwise I don't need to see it ever again. I hope that I would like it to just be a one-off, even though I'm sure that they're gonna continue it because it was just so fun and they loved it. Outside of that, I already said my Chernobyl thing. I said my piece, but I obviously am just a hater of ships, of legend ships, except for Avalanche, because I don't want Nate and Zari either. Like, stop it! Every time, I just want them to have, like, a very real and viable conflict that will end their relationship. Is that so hard? Is that asking too much? But instead, they just continue. I do think, like, you guys right, like, they dim each other's light. They make each other less interesting when they are together. And I don't know how they manage to do it. Because they are, like, cool characters on their own. But together, I'm like, And when you were saying, like, Zari with, and then you finish the Mediocre Man, I was thinking in my mind, Zari with child. And I was like, it does work, because he's like a child when he is with Zari. Anyway. Also could do without Robot Hoover. Or just, like, the Hoover plotline in general. And I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like in previous seasons, there's just so much joy. Like, I'm just filled with joy over Legends episodes. And then, like, all a bunch of, like, little things that I'm, like, really joyful about or just, I think, really fun. Even if I don't like the overall plot or whatever. But in this season, it's just, my heart's just not in it. I don't know what it is. I'm just, like, not feeling the spark. You know? Yeah. I don't know. I want it there. Is it because I'm pissed about Constantine? Is I like, am I harboring, like, resentment? I don't know. The look inside myself. But it's just not the same. Like, I feel like I can think of, like, so many more moments from, like, Flash and Batman, what the hell, Batwoman, you know, every week. And then with Legends, I'm like, things definitely occurred.
Right.
And I witnessed them. But I still love the characters, you know, I still wish them all the best. Actually, I spoke to, Lita? Daughter of Mick today?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Lost in Space. I did not realize she was the daughter from Lost in Space. But she is. And I did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, Mick's not there, but please come back. So, anyway, that is all. Feedback.
Yes. Let me see. Swar says, while this wasn't the strongest Legends episode this season, it was still very interesting. It seems that evil Gideon is going to be the main villain this season, as that doofus bishop foolishly dabbled in matters he didn't understand and fucked things up for the Legends. But seeing evil Gideon go all HAL 3000 was rather thrilling. She'll be a formidable force for the Legends, including regular good Gideon, to go up against. Speaking of them, I love Zari helping Davies with his anxiety and conveying to him the importance of therapy and getting your feelings out. Is it kind of sucky for a woman of color such as her to do that for a white man? Yeah, kind of. but I genuinely loved how she brought her own experiences to the fore and connected with him in that way. I also kind of bought Gideon and Gary's chemistry, but I also didn't necessarily like them jumping immediately to sex. I don't know. Writing with Gary is always weird, but again, I can buy it. What I unfortunately may never buy is Zari 1.0 and Nate. I just, as long as we don't have to see Nate with Zari on screen, it can be marginally better. Both Zaris only deserve the best romances. And then Shang says, the energy when you ladies talk about Steel Hacker was me when Lena and James were a thing.
No!
Like Helen Keller looking for chemistry. I really think the Legends writers can cause... I really think the Legends writers can cause Supercore fandom to be in disarray by making Spooner and Astra canon after they tell each other they were best friends and sisters a few more times. Future captains talking to the current captains. I really like that dynamic of Sarah Spooner, Ava Astra. You see how they both start with S and A. Oh, Sean is connecting the dots.
Yes, connect those dots. Connect those dots.
You see how they're both short, short, tall, tall. Also, Sarah and Spooner peeping out from behind the tree stump was so cute. They both are Spooner roles like a kill. Really wild seeing Astra give Ava the best form of stress release. That shot of Spooner and Astra at the campfire. It's gay, Your Honor. Gwen gives me non-stoner Klaus from Umbrella Academy. Gwen gives me non-stoner Klaus from Umbrella Academy vibes. Oh, that's true. I can see that. I really liked his talk with Zari 1.0, and I'm interested if we're going to see his ex and whether we would save his ex. Because if he does, when he changed the timeline, would he still have created the first time machine? Is this one of those situations where you can't save his loved one because that part of the timeline has already been fixed? So Gary did turn back into his alien form to Ben Gideon, or we don't tentacle kink shame in this house, okay? I do like how Evil Gideon has pretty much taken over. So I guess Evil Gideon is Skynet. So who is John Connor and who is Sarah Connor? I also think the Legends would have an identity crisis because they realize that they have fucked up the timeline a lot and perhaps have lost their original goal of actually protecting the timeline. But they would realize whenever they interfered, it was for the better, even if the future changed because of it. And in the end, they screw things up for the better. That's a good outlook. That's it. That's all the feedbacks.
We love it. Do we have any predictions?
I think Shang had a good one in terms of, because they've just done too much stuff now to be like, you know, and let's put it all back. So
right.
And at this rate, I'm just surprised they haven't just formed their own universe.
Exactly. I was
because
gonna say,
right? They're no longer part of the primary timeline anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe they're the cause for Despero. I don't know.
That would actually be great. That would be the best. All right. Now it is Batwoman time. How does your garden grow? Directed by Robert Duncan and written by Jerry Sandy and Natalie Abrams, our bestie. Mary being possessed by poison ivy and calling out, nope, that's my Joyce. I did not write these recaps down. What am I doing with my life? Okay. One second. Those are just my feelings. Okay. A teenager finds a man named Chris Hayner entombed in a honeycomb with honeybees on it, which alerts the police and Montoya. Sophie speaks to Renee about the man that froze a currently recuperating Jordan, as Renee advises Sophie not to get too close to uncovering the black glove, because they kill people. Alice figures out that Mary's been acting like poison ivy, which is confirmed when the bandages have been removed from Chris's eyes. Ryan and Luke hear about it and suspect that one of Poison Ivy's plants did it while learning about Poison Ivy's history with Renee Montoya. Mary handcuffs herself to a console. Batwoman and Alice find Virgil Getty, the man responsible for what happened to Jordan and his friends, buried up to his neck in soil, as Batwoman has him chained up in her basement. While Ryan is reluctant to hand Virgil over, While Ryan is reluctant to hand Virgil over to Renee, Alice leaks the information to Sophie, who gets information about Black Love out of him with a blowtorch. As Batwoman and Sophie argue about this, somebody quickly kills Getty. It turns out that sunlight sets off the infected side of Mary. She knocks out Luke. She gets freed by Alice. They become bestie sister team up thing going on. Upon tracking Mary to the botanical gardens, Batwoman and Batwing get entrapped by the plants as the poison ivy controlled Mary makes off with the Batwing component that contains Lucius Fox AI. Renee frees them while scolding them for withholding the information. And Sophie and Renee make out following a drink together, while Ryan calls in a favor from Jada Jet, and Alice meets up with Mary to drive off into the sunset of villainy together. Okay, what sparked joy?
Everything. this episode was so strong. The tension was amazing. And also just like, you could see the payoff that they've been building towards for several episodes, the tension with Mary, Mary feeling neglected, Alice sort of, you know, wiggling her way into the dynamic and like whispering in everybody's ears about, you know, this or that, and kind of creating a wedge between the two sides. So you have like Ryan and Luke versus Mary, who does not feel loved and whatnot. So I feel like her turning into Poison Ivy in this instance, and her little her anger at the end of this episode was just, it felt very warranted, especially after the last few episodes of, you know, understandably Ryan being, you know, occupied with all the stuff that's happening with her mom. Luke had no excuse. But I really like that, you know, because I was checking Tumblr the other day and I was answering a few asks, and I saw, I think Jess, you answered this, like you wanted Mary to take up space. And I was like, Mary took up a lot of space. She stepped up in this episode and did what she had to do. Even though it was not great to see her as an actual villain, it was good to see her like in her element. Like, I think Nicole knocked it out of the park in terms of, you know, her performance and kind of differentiating between like, oh, I'm Mary, I did not know what happened to me, and then like, I do know what happened to me, and I'm going to work with Alice, and we're just going to take this electric car and drive off into the sunset or whatever. So all of that was great. Even like, Alice is just, usually I find her very annoying, but like this season, maybe because she's not, again, no longer attached to Kate's stuff, like she's left that behind. She's being a villain in the way that I want her to be a villain, like her working with Ivy, knowing all this information before everybody else, sort of playing both sides. Like if she has to work with Renee Montoya, she's going to also have her own backup plan, which came in the form of Mary and being Poison Ivy. So I like that she was kind of all set to go in this instance. She's like, yep, this is my plan all along. Let's work together, bestie. So all of that came together really well. I do like the fact that, I don't know why I did not think of like the love triangle being between Renee and Ryan and Sophie, but I love it. I like that Renee Montoya was kind of like in the middle of it all, and there was like a lot of angst with her with regards to like her relationship with Pam, and also like what happened to her and how her involvement in all of it. I really like the fact that, you know, Ryan and Luke also felt really bad for how they treated Mary, and also that, you know, now that they know what they know, they're like, okay, let's go get our girl, you know, like we're gonna save her, because she definitely needs saving. But overall, I think that the episode like really raised the stakes. I really liked Sophie being proactive and trying to find out who hurt Jordan, and like, I mean, I didn't like her torturing that man, but I like that she got like some answers with regards to like how far back this goes, and also tying it in with Tommy Elliot and using like maybe he was also affected by, I don't know if it was the Joker or something, that they thought that, you know, their parents could help them in this way. Sort of like what happened with Marcus. So I thought that was interesting. I really laughed, and I don't know if Natalie Abrams did this on purpose, but Chris Hayner is the name of a journalist.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I know that they're friends. I was like, did she do this on purpose? Like, she just named the character after him. Because if she did, that's pretty funny. So, kudos to a well-written episode, and just like a lot going on. And I love that. And all, it all involves like all the main characters in some way. So excellent.
I loved this episode. Loved it. Loved everything about it. I loved the opening with the girls playing basketball. And the one girl, when she found him and he moved, she's like, oh, hell no.
Oh, and the reference to Candyman.
Yeah. All of that was just like, you know, the blackest thing is so accurate. Like, hell no. Let's get out of here. As much as I loved Mary entering her villain area, which I'll get to in a second, I also loved how smoothly Alice played the shit out of everyone and just like sowing all the little seeds of doubt. And I agree with you. I don't know like what it is, but this season it feels like Rachel's portrayal of Alice is also like leveled up and going back to the Flash. And I don't know if it's like, maybe it is because like she's not connected to Kate anymore, or she's not the center driver of the drama. She doesn't have that kind of weight, so she just gets to have more fun. Like, she seems like she's a little bit more relaxed. And she's, like, not really evil, but not really good either. She's, like, a Sour Patch Kid, I guess. She's, like, really settled into her chaotic neutral, and I love it. It's working for her. I, like, she riled up Mary by pushing her buttons about, and telling her about, excuse me, Luke, telling her and Luke about Renee and Pam's history together, because, like, you know, seen Mary's victim so far, one, you know, rejected her, and the other one had was Sophie, you know, is looking for who killed, like, or who tried to kill her sister. So there's like a motive there that is like setting Mary off whenever she goes into these trances. So Alice kind of riles her up with Renee and Pam's history, and then she also sows some doubt about like, why isn't Ryan here? And she just sows distrust between Sophie and Ryan by telling Sophie about Virgil, even though Ryan didn't want her to. And so she's doing like all this kind of stuff and taunting up like Mary about like, why is Ryan protecting her mom and not you when you're the one that's in trouble? And then only when she's all good and riled up, she triggers her with the sunlight to make her go full poison ivy. So I thought that was like really smart, because Mary literally takes out all of Alice's obstacles at one time, and then Alice is able to like run away with her. So I thought that was really smart move and smart play on Alice's part. And then with Mary, yeah, like there's we got Anon that was talking about how they didn't like how, you know, the whole kind of theme of Mary being mistreated or not noticed, and how like Ryan and Luke weren't paying attention to her. And I was like, on the one hand, yes, I feel like if Mary had stood up in that week when she first went missing and insisted that Ryan listen, then maybe like Ryan would obviously like stop to listen. But I don't know if it would have made any kind of difference, because Mary also stood up when she said like Luke's failsafe is there for a reason, and she didn't think he was able to, you know, fit to go back out. And Ryan listened to her, but then she overruled her. So I just feel like in this instance, when Mary's like disappeared, even if she had listened to Mary, I still think she would have been like, well, did you die? No. So, you know, like it still would have led to the same kind of thing. And it really always only comes down to Mary needing to take up space. Because I feel like for a lot of her life, she was kind of second in their family, because Kate always took up a lot of attention. And then in Kate and Jacob's life, Alice took up a lot of attention because she was their actual family member by blood. And so I feel like, but Mary's never, she's like, you know, shrunk herself down so that she fits into a space rather than making people make space for her. So, you know, I was like, you know, she just needs to kind of put her foot down and just kind of actually take up some space. And if anything, a villain is going to take up some space. So I really like her being in this villain era. And she did just that. She took up a lot of space in this episode, which I thought was great. I went off on a tangent. I have to like read. And I also like, I think in this episode, it was really interesting because when Alice tells her that she's a villain, like she doesn't believe it. She's like in denial. She's like, oh my God, I would never hurt anybody. And when they figure out that it's like the truth, she's like, chain me to the bat cave so I will not hurt a single person. Like she's very like dramatically, oh my God, like this is the word. And she, it's like, even in that point where she's like, I could hurt somebody. And Ryan and Luke are like, I don't, I'm confused. And not really like taking her seriously, even though she's like, we must chain me here. So I thought that was really cute, because it just kind of shows that even in her villain era, she's still at her core kind of Mary. And I feel like, you know, even as Poison Ivy, she still didn't kill anybody. Like, yes, the Chris guy almost drowned in honey, but like he almost drowned, like, he didn't die. So she's her like method, her like what do you call it? Her status of being like a good, her doctorate or whatever, the oath of do not kill is still intact. She didn't kill the Virgil guy. She just buried him. So even though she's a villain, she still has a little bit of a moral code. You know, so that's kind of good. I feel like there's still a way to get to Mary there. And I feel like all of her motives have, like, all of her, like, crimes, if you will, have had like a decent modus, except for the rejection, because that was a little bit a little extreme. But all of the other ones, she had a right to be mad with Virgil and avenge Sophie for her. She had a right to be mad with Luke and a right to be mad with Ryan. I loved like the botanical scenes. That was amazing. I liked the whole get up, the shot of her blending into the leaves like Homer Simpson going back to the hedge was hilarious. I liked that scene of like Luke freaking out about, you know, trying to talk to his dad and then realizing his dad isn't there, and like freaking out when Mary's got him strung up. He's like, dad, save me. And I even like her taunting him about it, like, oh, there's your daddy's not gonna save you now, like all that kind of stuff. I thought it was great, you know, great talk. I liked her chewing out Ryan for sure about being a crappy friend. I like that Ryan admitted that she's a crappy friend. And I like that they, you know, obviously, you know, we have to save Mary now. We've been crappy. We need to make amends. So all that is great. And then also, I'm just like convinced that arguing is like how Sophie flirts. Because like all of her love interests have been antagonists to lovers, or frenemies to lovers, or enemies to lovers. It's all the same. She starts out like not getting along with them, and then boom, they're making out in the back of a bar. I didn't watch this live. So I was seeing like Renee and Sophie and Wildmore Ace all over like Twitter. And I was like, I don't know how Renee could possibly have entered into a triangle at this point, because they hadn't connected it. But like, I guess the answer is just that she is that bitch. Like that's all there is to it.
Basically.
So, I mean, I you know, people were like upset, you know, about Wildmore and everything. I love it. I love all of it. I like the argument. I thought the argument, especially because Sophie, we knew was like, we were seeing her being attracted to Ryan. So like, why would she leave Ryan and go to Renee? But the argument makes sense. And how it left open a door for Montoya to come in. So, I mean, all of that worked for me. I love it. I like that they're so petty, too. Like, when Renee, I forget what Sophie was saying. Oh, Sophie was saying that she and Batwoman weren't seeing eye to eye right now. And Renee was like, drama.
Yeah, it was like a messy bitch. <literally.
laughs> Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought it was, I also thought it was a really good episode. I love this whole, the way that they're working Poison Ivy in through Mary, and that this could happen to her, and that her friends and her team like wouldn't notice, and for them to actually feel so bad about that at the end, that they're actually going over that and like, hey, wait a second, maybe we did fuck up. Also love Alice taking full advantage of that now it's like, I can imagine. Because before, I was like, I really wish that they would delve into the sisterly bond, even though there isn't one. But the fact that there should be one, or there could be one, the absence of one between Alice and Mary, and now it feels like we could actually do that through this little, like, detour into villainy on Mary's part. Because obviously, Alice is looking for it. She loves the idea of, like, bad Mary. And maybe we're gonna get some, like, development of, like, real affection between like the whatever the real Mary is and the real Alice is, to be able to utilize in the future. So yeah, and I especially loved like Alice like playing mind games on Team Bat, like, oh, you know, like, oh, well, Mary did this, and like, you know, like, And even with like Sophie and Ryan, right? Where she's like, well, Ryan doesn't want, you know, she's only looking out for her mom. I was like, okay, but it worked. So I
was gonna say, and Sophie's been such a good roommate. She like
right.
washes her clothes and does all this stuff.
Yes, but I love how Alice is able to like manipulate everyone, and it still feels like it's natural. It is like, that's just what Alice would do. And also, it's not like she doesn't believe it, right? So she's just living her life, and it just happens to be wrecking other people's. Also totally agree, Mary deserves to be angry, and she just happens to have some powers to back up that anger right now. but I was kind of like cheering for her, but not too much when she was like up against Luke. And then when she and Alice like go off, like, I don't know, Thelma and Louise style, I'm very excited for where this is going to go in the next episode. Also, I liked how at first, like, Luke and Ryan were like, oh, I mean, it's probably just, like, the plants. Or, like, it's definitely not Mary. Like, obviously, we know that that wouldn't be like that. They're just, like, coming up with reasons for why that could not be the case, even though it so obviously was the case. I also did enjoy the tension between Sophie and Ryan, because it is nice to throw a few wrenches, you know, put a few flies in the ointment. You can't just like let it be smooth sailing from the start. Otherwise, they would just be dating, and that would just be the end of it. And we knew it had to be a bit of a slow burn. So I am here for that. I don't know what the heck I meant when Luke figuring out sunlight. Oh, sunlight is the trigger. That's what I meant. I was like, Luke figuring out sunlight is the Twitter. But I did like how they showed that sunlight was Mary's trigger. And as has already been said, Nicole's performance, you know, as Mary versus as Poison Ivy Mary versus Mary realizing everything and now, you know, making her own choice about it. So yeah, overall, really good episode. Interesting to see what's going to happen when Jada is called in. So, looking forward to that. What did we not like, if anything?
Ryan and Sophie fighting.
Yeah.
I did not like that. And I didn't like it because, like, coming off of what we learned last week about, you know, Marcus and Jada's history and whatnot and telling Ryan. And it's frustrating because Sophie's right. Like, she's been hurt. Like, it's her, right? She's been her mm-hmm. confidant this whole season. She's been helping her with all the Jada stuff. She's been her emotional support. So for Ryan to, like, not tell her what's going on with her family after Sophie learned all about her family to begin with
right.
doesn't make any sense to me. And I feel like that part of it was sort of contrived in the sense that they needed to have conflict between Ryan and Sophie so Sophie could just run into the arms of Montoya by the end of the episode. Because it didn't feel right. And I know that it will eventually be resolved, but I don't like it as it stands now, because I feel like at least there could have been more reasoning on Ryan's part as to why she'd want to keep that secret, because like there's no reason to want to protect the family that alienated you from someone like Sophie, who already knows what they did. So, you know, not feeling that at all. And like with the Luke and Mary stuff, it was great. But I would also liked it more if, like, it would have stung a little bit more if Luke and Mary were actually more of a ship before this episode. Because
I guess if they were more of a ship, then he wouldn't have ignored her for so long.
True, but like the way that it completely ignored her. Like, if he was more occupied, like if we had seen more about his PTSD and him trying to like cope with that in some way, shape, or form, it would have justified him being like, oh, well, I'm too busy right now. Like, I'm in my own head, versus mm-hmm. Luke just like sitting around talking about it occasionally, but like us not actually getting into his head about how he feels about it, you know? But yeah, otherwise, the episode was beautiful.
I love the Wildmore argument, but I guess the only thing that I wouldn't understand why it was necessary to keep the fact that Marcus has issues away from not just Sophie, but also the team, because she's hiding it from the team as well. And so I don't know like what she and Jada agreed upon or whatever, but it doesn't really make sense to me why it would be dangerous for other people to know that he's crazy. I guess, you know, at minimum, probably they would like, well, we need to take him in or we need to arrest him or whatever. Fine, I guess. It isn't like I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility or like realism why she would want to protect him, though. Not like Jada specifically, because I think like Sophie, and I think Sophie had completely valid points, because it kind of feels like Ryan used her, you know, to talk about her mom. Sophie did all this work to find her mom. Sophie supported you while you were, you know, why did she leave me? And now all of a sudden, for seemingly no reason at all, she's your best friend and you can't help me. So I totally think Sophie is valid in the way that she feels. And I can understand Ryan wanting to protect Marcus, because Marcus hadn't done anything to her. Marcus didn't abandon Ryan and wanting to help him. But I think it's like a little bit confusing why not keeping it a secret from the Bat team is helping. You know, I feel like you would want all hands on deck on how to help Marcus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also feel like I don't know how I feel about the Black. I feel like I'd rather the Black Glove Society to be running drugs or something like that. The fact that they're all like rich parents, you know, with money to burn to experiment and kill people to help their kids with issues doesn't sit right with me. I don't know. I'd rather you just be like a, you know, good old fashioned mafia, you know, running the city behind the scenes in the shadows kind of organization. I don't know.
Yeah. So first, okay, with Black Love, I guess it's just kind of Black Love. It's not annoying me as much as the Poison Ivy thing is annoying me. It's like, it's annoying me that we're like, it's what, 13 episode season? We're 6 episodes in. There's no Poison Ivy yet. We're going to get married now. That's good. But Bridget Regan, I feel like I knew that she was coming on, or at least Poison Ivy's coming on for like a year. And I'm like, hello, where is the Ivy of the Poison? So that is annoying, especially now. You know, you give me this backstory with Renee and Poison Ivy. And then before Pamela even shows up, she's hooking up with Sophie. I'm like, hello. But I, you know, like you, I do like the angst. I like the angst it's contributing, but I don't know that the order of, like, the speed of it or the order of events is what I would have preferred. I would have liked to meet Poison Ivy first before we, you know, make it a love square, love pentagon, however many people are in the thing. But that's okay. Outside of that, I also agree that the thing that feels forced is Ryan keeping the situation with Marcus and her mom a secret, or trying to protect them. Because like you said, why wouldn't she try to get as much help as possible? It feels like it means she doesn't trust them as much as she's supposed to, right? Like they aren't really fully gelled as a team, but she does trust them. It's just the show wanted to create this conflict. Because at first I was like, why are we even like talking about this? Like, she just met her mom 2 weeks ago. I don't think she's picking her family over her team, but they introduced it just so that we would have these issues shooting off in various directions, I guess. And it doesn't, that's probably like one of the few things that like doesn't feel natural to me. Is there anything else? I mean, I'm sad that Ryan is up here fighting, but I do like it. You know, I do like the drama. I do think it works. That was a pretty good episode. And I feel like, I guess I just feel like in retrospect, I just feel bad for Mary that it's got to this point. But it is making for good drama now. So that is good. All right. Do we have feedback?
Sora says, oh my God, Batwoman. The episodes are just getting better and better, honestly. And while my heart breaks for Mary succumbing to Poison Ivy infection, I can't help but kind of love it and the moral duplicity it gives her character. Will Luke save her through the power of love? I need it. I'm hopeful that they'll get her back, and I hope that they don't make Mary a full-time villain. Maybe an anti-hero? Nicole, is it King or Kong? Because now, like, Shang has me rethinking all of my A and G.
Oh, that's a good point.
Names. Oh, that's a good question, yeah.
We'll Google it. Nicole knocked it out of the park with her performance. While I hate that Alice indulged in her bad tendencies, I actually kind of love them teaming up. It's such a weird and twisted partnership, and I can't wait to see what else they do. While it's painful to watch the disagreement and argument between Ryan and Sophie, it was still well written and performed, and I bought it from both of their sides. While I want Waldmore to happen, I appreciate them taking their time and even introducing a realistic tensions in this way, and I can't wait for what happens next. Last note, that descent. Oh, yeah. The descent by Ryan with the cape flowing, 10 out of 10. Totally agree with that. The imagery of her just like coming down in the botanical gardens with like the red on her wings. Beautiful. So that was from Swara. Sonia says, oh my God, this episode was amazing from start to finish as we got answers about why Jada used the Black Glove Society and how the Black Glove Society came to be, as well as a brilliant Poison Ivy storyline with Mary. At first, I was annoyed that Alice was being so coy about Mary, as Ryan and the team could really help Mary, but I realized that if she outright said that Mary was infected, who knows what Renee would do to Mary. So maybe she has good intentions. I mean, after seeing the episode, probably not, but still. Mary's trying to tell Luke and Ryan that she's Poison Ivy was hilarious, as was Alice equating it to Kate trying to come out to the family. Mary,
oh, that's right. Are you coming out?
That was funny. Mary needing to reiterate the fact that she's not gay to Luke Hamilfox Rise. So Mary goes into a fugue state, and then Poison Ivy takes over, which is super creepy, as is the fact that she targeted her honey victim because he dismissed her on a dating app. I loved how Luke was like, I only skimmed your DMs, I swear. Like, boy, what did you find in there that's making you so awkward? Ryan calling Alice out for knowing Mary was Ivy's host and not telling them, and Alice being all, how the heck did you guys know this? And don't throw this all on me. Like, yes, good point. The fact that Mary found the Black Glove Society guy after Sophie hit a dead end and Renee said no one had ever been able to find them. Maybe y'all should treat Mary better and realize how valuable she is. Luke being concerned with Mary feeling weird and going to get her water because she's probably dehydrated. Hamel Fox Rise. Alice telling Luke and Mary about Renee and Pamela's story, but also at the same time trying to scare Mary about being caught. LMAO at the fact we found out through Alice that Sophie washes her dishes and her clothes, and that also goes as far as to use special fabric softener that doesn't irritate Alice's skin. Love it. Interesting to find out the Black Glove's been around for a while, and it was started by Tommy Elliott's mom to probably freeze her sociopath child so they could help him, similar to Jada and Marcus, and that there are many more rich parents with crazy children that want to help continue fund the society. Why in the world can't Ryan just tell Sophie and for that matter, Luke and Mary about Jada and Marcus? Like, what am I missing? It might be able to help. Mary confronting Renee about turning Pamela in and having Batman basically bury her alive. Whoa. I love how Luke was like, I'm not ready to wear the suit, but I'm also not ready to lose Mary. Hamel Fox Rise. There's a theme in this feedback. Mary took out the failsafe and Lucius Fox AI from the suit after Luke put it back in, and then taunted him about needing his daddy and whatnot, and throwing his words about not having PTSD and not needing help back in his face. Like, I know she's a villain right now, but yeah, you tell him, Mary.
Sexy. Yeah.
So sexy. Important that Ryan and Luke both feel bad for not noticing the red flags of Mary, but I wish after Ryan said, she told me about the park thing and I ignored her for my family drama, that Luke would bring up ignoring her for his petty reasons, because he was there when Mary told them both, and that he just ignored her because he was still mad about the PTSD thing. Alice and Mary teaming up and being villainous together, yes please. Also Renee and Sophie making out, I'm guessing the love triangle is Renee, Sophie, Ryan, which I love to see. Okay, when Ryan said she was going to get some help with the science stuff to make a cure from Mary, I thought she was going to go to Alex or Lena from Supergirl. I don't think she's met them, she doesn't know them. Or Caitlin from The Flash. She hasn't met them yet, Sonia. But then the next scene is Ryan calling Jada. So she's confused about how Ryan gets over to the crossover. But she can't wait to see what happens next. And that's all the feedback.
And neither can we. Speaking of which, do we have any thoughts?
I did, but I lost it. Oh, yeah, I remember now. Because I also got Anon. This is Anon was like a week or two ago, I think. I think it was maybe right after. No, it must have been last week, because it was when, it could have been when Mary got infected. But they were like, they saw on Twitter, someone was talking about, what about the tree in the Batcave? What if that's Poison Ivy? And especially after this episode, I think that it could definitely be the case, because if Batman was going to bury Poison Ivy somewhere, the Batcave would be the best place to put her, because there's no sunlight getting down there.
Mm. And it would be somewhere you can watch over.
Exactly. And also, that's fucked up. That's very inhumane.
It is. Yeah.
She, and like how Mary described her as like her veins feel like sandpaper and she doesn't have any sunlight. It's just horrible.
Yeah, it is. But that means she's closer in proximity.
Right.
So she can get out at some point by the end of next episode, I think.
Yeah, I'm not blaming her for being upset with Renee for that, for sure. I also think Jada will want a quid pro quo. Like, she, even though Ryan is protecting her secret, and even though she needs help controlling Marcus, I don't think she's going to give Mary and Luke a cure for, not Mary and Luke, Ryan and Luke a cure for Mary, unless they help her take Marcus. Because I think in the trailer, Marcus is with Ryan, and then they get, like, quote-unquote ambushed, and he gets, like, injected with something. So I think Jada is going to get Ryan's help to take out Marcus. Judas. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which probably will not go well.
Probably not.
Definitely spark off Marcus for the new year and being the new Joker, so.
Agreed.
Lady with Gumption of the Week.
Oh, no, that's right.
Oh, my God.
I forgot. Who is our Lady's Gumption of the Week?
For The Flash, I would say
Iris.
Yeah. The only one who had gumption.
Interesting.
Well, Allegra had gumption.
Yeah.
We just don't want to give it to her. We are the Ivy League journalists that do not care about Allegra or her authority. What about Legends?
Legends?
Good question.
Sorry?
Yeah, I was going to say sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she will not win, and neither will Iris.
Because it goes to Mary.
I think Alice is a strong runner-up, though, because I just think, like, Alice, the way that she played with everybody was great, but definitely Mary.
I would say Alice over the candidates from the other shows.
Exactly.
But yes, Mary for sure is the winner. So yay, yeah, congratulations to you, Mary. Here is your award. Thank you for coming. please visit our Patreon if you would like to give us money to hear us talk about the second half of Doom Patrol, among other things. And you can always catch us at DCTVGumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Thank you all, and good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.